Your dad was just a little guy on a tricycle scooting around the basement. And I come walking in the room once, and he was always tinkering with electronic stuff, which was pretty basic electronics by comparison to today's technology and so on.
Right.
And he'd be behind the TV, you know, one of the big old console TVs,
mm-hmm.
and he'd have a screwdriver, and I'd be looking at him, and I'd say, Bob, at the time, everybody called him Bobby, and I'd tell you, your grandfather, I'd say, Bob, you know, Bobby's got a screwdriver, and your dad and grandpa would look over and say, Bobby, be careful, son. And that was the extent of it. I mean, what the hell was that? He wasn't worried about it. I was. But it turned out your dad latched, just like his cousin here, latched onto electronics and became very skilled, very adept at it, and made a living out of it. So, but yeah, I remember he was just a little guy. He couldn't have been 3-4 years old scooting around on a tricycle, 100 miles an hour. And your grandma had put laundry up in the basement that hung up sheets and stuff like that. And he was scooting in and out, and occasionally he would run into a sheet and pull the thing off the and of course that caused all kinds of consternation. They put the sheet up, but by then when they put it back up, it didn't look quite clean.
Oh no.
And hindsight afterwards, many years afterwards, I'd kind of laughingly compare it to being in a pet store with a dog, you know, and the people would come in and look at you and so on.
I'm sorry.
But anyway, I was adopted, and again, that's how I got brought into the family. Your grandma, your dad's grandpa's mom, my mom was, the name was Ethel Bischel. Did you know her maiden name?
No, I didn't. Bischel?
It was Bischel, B-I-S-H-E-L. And I'll give you a few things. She come from a family of 13.
Wow.
They all were born and raised. I'm pretty sure they were born and raised in a little town in northern Iowa, just not very far south of the Minnesota border, called Sheffield, just like it sounds, like the Sheffield in England, spelled the same way. It's on Highway 65. It's a little town, and that's where they were all born and raised. My mom's mom, died when she was very young, and I think I've got the right thing, and the reason I do is because I got a picture of a couple of tombstones, and it shows her dad, Arthur Bischel, and a woman, Ella May Bischel, and Ella May Bischel was born in 1872 and died in 1896. I think that was your great-great-grandfather's first wife. And she died in childbirth. I think I heard that. Maybe not. Jump in, Joyce.
Yeah, I think that was mom.
And that would seem to be consistent with those dates.
Right.
In
1896.
Okay, well, that's
1896.
So, and then Arthur Bischel, who was born in 18, her great-great-grandfather, who was born in 1862, died in 1954.
Wow, he was quite old.
That was Arthur Bischel. He was around 92, and this is all, I'm sure, Sheffield, Iowa records. And if you don't go to Sheffield, then you may have to go to the county, which is a bigger town called, just north of Sheffield, called Mason City.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all those records.
Yeah, you can get some of those records. But Mason City, Iowa, is, and that's where we would go when we went up to visit. We would have to drive to Mason City to get, the food or this or whatever reason we had to buy something at the store, because Sheffield was the proverbial one-horse town, maybe 300 or 400 people at the time. I don't know what they got in there now.
Okay.
But wow. I drive at I-35 to head north, and I go up there every year fishing to Canada, and I drive right by it. It shows up Sheffield and Mason City, and they're still there. And like I said, his name was Arthur Bischel, and he shows up as being born in 1862, died in 1954. That's consistent. I'm pretty sure that's him. And Ella May Bischel, and I recognize the Ella May, and she was a young woman. She died in childbirth. There were a total of 13 kids. There was whatever the first number of kids, the few, and my mom was among that group that were born with the first wife. He remarried. I can't find any records of the remarried. And there was, and they had more kids.
More than 13? Or more to make the 13?
No. They totaled 13.
Oh, okay.
Between her half-brothers and her half-sisters. And
gotcha.
That was always a term they used, which kind of, later on in life to me, resonated as kind of a silly reference. But anyway, they referred to them as half-brothers, half-sisters. And but she, the total among the brothers and sisters, from the first wife who died and the second wife who lived to be a pretty good age, I think, was 13 kids. And your great grandmother, actually it's your grandfather's mother, your great grandmother, Ethel, was one of that first group of kids, small group. I think John was another one, Bishop, and Cliff Bishop. John lived in I'm gonna get to my mom here shortly, but John lived in Sheffield. I think he lived in that area all of his life. And Cliff moved out to Kenilworth, and his name is Kenilworth, Washington.
State, right? I mean, yes, that makes sense. I'm sorry. Obviously, it would be Washington State. So, Kenilworth.
It's K-E-N-E-L. I think I didn't look up. And Cliff was, they were older brothers to my mom. So, she was, they were the, I think the first, they were older than her because she would always tell me they were older brothers.
Okay.
And then there was the next batch of kids. And I can't remember, I only got the seven, I think. But there was, you could just Pearl and Mabel. And they lived in Des Moines, Iowa. And we're going to come back to Pearl, because I think Joyce is going to tell you something that kind of surprising. And then there was Thelma, who lived in Omaha.
Thelma?
And it was my Uncle Earl, who lived in Glenwood, Iowa. Now, Glenwood was right on the other side of the Missouri River, on the other side of Omaha, not very far from Omaha. And I used to go out there fishing their lakes. He was a farmer. He worked at the UP Railroad. He was an electrician at the UP Railroad. He was a military vet. He served in submarines, had a hell of a record, got blown out of the water, I think, twice. Come back, got a job with the as an electrician at the Union Pacific Railroad, and he farmed, had about a 360-acre farm.
Yeah.
Worked his butt off with a cigarette in his mouth the whole time. What a hell of a guy, a good guy. And he was, I laugh about him, when my adopted dad died,
Mm-hmm. Named
the enforcer in the family. But I would start turning into a jerk and got a little too much for my mom to handle. She would call my Uncle Earl and think, oh, shit. And here'd come Uncle Earl. And he was one of the nicest guys, except when you made him mad. And a little like your dad in that respect.
My dad?
No, not you. No, your dad's just, yeah, your dad like your grandmother. No, I said your dad. I meant your grandfather.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. But I can come up with those names, Ethel, John, Cliff, and then the next wife's, the offspring, with the next wife, Pearl, Mabel, Alma, and Earl. And I can't remember the others. And I asked Joyce, I said, I just got a brain lock. I guess that's one of the problems when you get so damn many kids. My wife comes from
a family. When you get old, you don't remember.
Yeah, old, the age part, probably, she had to take the shot. The age part.
No, well, let's call it the amount of kids. That's a lot for any age to remember.
And anyway, let's join tell you something. That's a strange thing that a lot of us speculated, but we didn't really know. And this may be confusing in a way. I don't know. My mom always said, and I'm going to get to how that maybe to some of the background of my mom there that we know about, because she never really entirely opened up, but she always insisted when your brother would come to Omaha. Your grandpa would come to Omaha to visit, that they would go and visit her sister, Pearl, in Des Moines, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us, that was strange, and even some of the other sisters and brothers. Go ahead, Joyce.
Well, for one thing, Bob was not a very big man,
mm-hmm.
and Mike's She was a big woman.
She was like 5'7", something like that.
No, she was taller than that.
Well, okay.
And she was a big, bone woman. And Earl was small. And Bob was a small, bone man. Which would be her. And she would insist that we all pack up, we go to Des Moines, Iowa, because Aunt Earl just had to see Bob. Your problem. And but it tell me that, you know, how she lost Bob when he was a baby, that they were at this house, or she was, the house making diapers for Bob back in those days. I mean, they probably had to be poor as church mice. And that rating, like, what's the way you call that?
Grandma Quinlan and her boyfriend at the time this is the part that's kind of humorous and also very serious. But her boyfriend was a guy named Al Chaplick. And I don't know how to spell it, but I think it's C-H-A-P, either L-I-C or L-I-C-K.
Okay.
He was a mobster.
He was a mobster?
He was a benign mobster. He was the bootlegger. Yeah. The guy that ran the bootlegger business in Kansas City.
Oh. Anyway, they came in and raided and they took Bob away from her.
Oh.
So that story. Now, I never believed that.
Grandma said that story. And then we heard modified versions of that, which somehow brought Pearl into the play. We never, and like I said, it's what she said, we just accepted. But she, they busted her, and I think they, I don't know if they, how far along, but they were, I had heard a story that Al Chaplick and Grandma Quinlan were together. They had been lovers, for lack of a better word, and she got pregnant. And back in those days, and then about the same time that happened, where she was pregnant, Al Chaplick got busted by the cops for being a bootlegger and got sent to jail. And he died relatively soon after that. I don't know how or what the circumstances were, but Grandma Quinlan was pregnant. And back in those days, that was an absolute horrendous situation.
I don't believe that at all. I think, covering, because she said before she passed away, that I've got a secret and I'm taking it with me to my grave. And I don't think it was because Bob was Aunt Pearl's son.
Bob was Aunt Pearl's son?
That's what Grandma, that's what it was strange because when Bob would come to town, she would insist on them going to
all of us
going to Des Moines to visit Pearl. And there was Mabel living over in Des Moines. There was other people in the family that could have been visited, but she had to visit Pearl.
And Bob always thought too.
With
your
grandpa. And I don't know if we can get that, if that's a legitimate observation on our part, but I know what your mom, I know what Grandma Quinlan told me, or told someone very close to me who told me, she was a girlfriend to a bootlegger, Al Chaplick. They could literally control or were involved in the bootlegging in Kansas City.
Yeah,
she got pregnant. He got busted by the cops. Wound up going to jail. I think he died in jail. I'm not sure. And the grandma was all by herself. And when that baby was born, your grandpa, back in those days, you didn't keep him. You didn't... all this dialogue that she got politically now is a bunch of BS because you put them up for adoption. Very few women will willing to tough it out and keep.
Then how did Bob become adopted by the tank?
I don't know. Now, I remember that I was adopted, and I have to tell you this, Peter, and my adopted dad died when he was 49 years old, not too many years after I was adopted. I was adopted when I was six, and I think I was around 10 years old when he died. That would make it around 1950. And I remember being in the house, and this was the early 50s, when a call came to us one evening. My mom took the call, and I said, watched her, and I knew something was going wrong. Something was happening very significant, because she became very emotional and become very rattled, flustered, and if the call turned out to be your grandfather calling her, reaching out to his real mom. He apparently went and done research and checked everything and got put on to Ethel Quinlan in Omaha, and after he'd done his additional research and so on, he called her. And I remember her saying, we're going to go down to Kentucky. And I mean, we literally packed in a matter of days, day or two, and got a train. My dad worked for the railroad, so he could get passes, and we had flash passes, which we could go anywhere in the country on any train, because that was a consideration that they offered the railroad employees.
That's cool.
We got on to Chicago and then got on the Wabash and took the Wabash down to Evanston, Indiana, which is where your grandfather was living. And that was the first time I met your grandfather.
You were 10?
I was 10 or 11 years old. It was early 50s, 50, 51, somewhere around there.
What did you think of him?
Pardon me?
Do you remember what you thought of him when you met him?
I think I was impressed with him, because you got to remember he had just come not too long back, from the war.
Oh yeah.
And he had been in some horrendous shit. Put it bluntly.
Yeah.
Your grandpa was in, and he wouldn't talk about it, but I remember Marguerite, your grandma, coming up and showing me some medals. Now, I'm a little kid there, and the medals, I'm awed by medals, but I didn't, you know, check it out and see which medals it was and all that. But I was awed by the medals, and I remember asking your grandpa, gee, is that worth anything? And your grandfather, his usual joking manner, said, I suppose if you had that thing in a nickel, you could get a cup of coffee. Response. And he was very blatant, very casual about it. And nobody could ever get him to talk very much. I think your grandma, Marguerite, did. But she'd bring over that stuff and show it to me. She was very proud. And he was just reluctant to talk about anything. And we never ever started talking. Never. You just couldn't get him. And I had already been in the Marine Corps now. I'm fast forwarding about 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. 20 years. Oh, more than that. Yeah, more than that. And over the years that we stayed together, we occasionally visit, so on and so forth. One day, when it's your Donna and your dad, I thought, your grandfather, I thought, owned a condo in Madeira Beach, right north of Tampa, yeah. And we would all go over there. That happened a couple times. We would go over there and visit them, stay there, and there'd be a whole bunch of your families down there. Mm-hmm. And I know they come down there periodically throughout the year and so on. But we were over there, and my brother was there. And him and I got into the beer one night, talking. And he started letting loose.
Oh.
And everybody was just sitting there wide-eyed. And I remember someone, I don't remember who the hell it was, coming. And I'm just sitting there absolutely with everybody. Nobody is, you'd ask a question, a clarification question, and that would be it. He didn't want to interrupt him. He was on a roll. Joyce wants to say something here. But somebody came in and said, you know, we have dinner reservations. And everybody looked at that person and said, no, just shut up. because they finally got him to open up. All right, go ahead.
The reason that he got opened up and started talking is because he was very, very sick. He was diagnosed with cancer. We were all on the boat, Donna and Louis.
That was before he started to get the homeopathic treatment, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and he was doing this vegetarian stuff and everything. And
yeah, I think
he was on it. And that's why he opened up and decided he should tell you. After all, you were his brother.
Well, I don't know if that's why he did, but I don't know if you heard what Joyce said, that he had his first round with cancer there. He had been diagnosed, and it kind of rattled him, and she thinks that's maybe why he started opening up. But I remember him telling me, we were talking on I had talked to him a couple times, and when they had the 50th anniversary of the D-Day landing.
Oh, yeah.
And former captain of his company was a pretty successful businessman who had leased or chartered a plane to take what was left of the company over to Normandy.
Oh, wow.
For the occasion there, the celebration. And your dad wouldn't go.
No, I couldn't find his brother.
Not your dad. Your grandpa wouldn't go.
Couldn't
what?
Find his birth certificate.
And, he was opposed to that. Come away. Joyce said he couldn't find his birth certificate, but the first problem was he wasn't going. He didn't have, that was just as obstinate as he could get when he decided he wasn't going to do something. He would just sink his teeth in it, and that'd be it for him.
Sounds about right.
And every one of your aunts, your dad, tried to get him to go, and then finally a couple of them called me and said, maybe you can do something. I called him. Started talking to him, and he started giving me, that was yesterday, I don't have any, and this was before the Madeira Beach conference, started spilling, but finally, after about the second or third call, I reached out to one of his officers that he served with, I think the guy that owned at least the charter, and they said it'd be so important, Bob, that he was so involved, and he'd tell me a few anecdotes about your grandfather. But I finally got a hold of your grandfather, and I said, and pushed him again, and he became very, very, and I said, Bob, stop being a selfish son of a bitch. This is what you're acting like, some selfish son of a bitch. I said, you ain't doing this for you. You're doing it for the guys that didn't come back. You're doing it for the people you serve with. And all that, it gets me emotional when I think about the conversation. Mm-hmm. I said, you're just a selfish SOB. You're going there for them to show respect for what they did. The ones that didn't come back and the ones that come back screwed up. And he finally, I think it was maybe a little piece of it, something to do with it. He finally changed his mind and he went. He told me after, he said, you were right.
Oh.
And then they go back to the Madeira Beach thing. Mm-hmm. He was telling me about some war stories. And I remember him telling two things that I remember him telling me.
Mm-hmm.
He said he had been in five major engagements. Oh, here's a tidbit that just absolutely blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
He enlisted in the Army. Listen to these dates. On December 6, 1941.
That's unfortunate.
1941, the day before Pearl Harbor, what the hell made you? He said, well, it just wasn't good, and he enlisted out of Kansas City. I know that. He told me that.
had
and,
rough time.
He said, you could see things were going to happen. That we were going to be in a war in just a matter of time. And then as he tells the story, and again, he's got a joke and clown around about it. He said he got in the Army, and then he found out if you were willing to jump out of a perfectly good plane, you could make an extra $50 a month as a paratrooper. Well, he said, that's for me. That's how he wound up going into paratroopers. And he was in, now back to the thing, he was in five major engagements. And I remember him telling me, he started out anywhere from nine, I think I got the numbers right, I think they're very close, if not accurate, 9 to 13 people in the squad, never come to more than five of the originals.
Wow.
He, I think the first time he went, he was a platoon, he was a corporal, and people were just getting wiped out all around him, and he finally, then he got promoted, a field promotion to sergeant. And then he became the squad leader, and then he was the sergeant for the next four times after that. I think he told me that two or three times he had been offered platoon leader, which is an officer position, a second lieutenant. And he said, I don't want that job. He said, they're all getting killed. He laughed, you know, again, he's joking around about it. He said, they're getting killed. What the hell would I take that job for? They said, actually, but you became the acting platoon leader. There was nobody else around to do it, and he wound up doing it.
So he was...
He told me time about a story, and I don't know if this is where he got his Silver Star, but the one that Marguerite brought and showed to me that day. But he was talking about, I'll tell you something about his attitude about the Germans and the Brits, the Italians. I'll come back to that. But he told me, he said that they had, were in a, got into some, right in the middle of some shit. And again, this is what he, the language he used, and that's what they used when they were in combat.
Right.
And he said the Germans had them zeroed in with them damned 88s. And he said, somehow or another, they got separated. Part of the group was on one side of the road, and the other part was on the other side when them 88 rounds started coming in. And he said, we got to call in artillery support. Somebody said, yeah, but the phone is on the other side of the road. And he said, Jesus, you know, and they're saying, and he said, he looked up and he told some young guy, he said, we got to get that phone. He said, can you go across and get that phone? Pick up that phone. And he said, he saw that young kid's eyes, and he said, and being blunt now, the exact words, he said, he had shit run down his leg. He said, he was so scared. He says, if I'm going to do it, he said, if it's going to get done, I got to do it. So he did it, ran across, got the radio. In the process, he found a guy that was still wounded, and he carried him back to the other side with enemy firing in. I think that's how he got his Silver Star. I don't know.
Wow.
Never correlated anything. He had to pull it out of him. Except for that one night that he just got half snocked, three four snockered, and started talking. He thought he had great admiration for the Brits and the Germans. In his exact words, he said, you know, they're fighters, boy. And he said, you know, the goddamn Germans never gave you anything. You had to take it from them. And he made you pay the price to take it. And he said, they're hell of a fighters. And he had great admiration for the Brits, too. He said, them son of a bitches would be up there. You could hear the fire coming down. And he said, then they'd send up relief, finally. After a few, you could hear just all kinds of stuff happening up there. And they'd send up the relief, and here they'd come down. And he said, hey, look what, they've been all terrible. And then they'd say, well, how'd it go up there, Colonel? He said, well, we had a bit of a go. And he just thought that was, you know, what the hell, a bit of a go? goddamn way. Hmm. And he said, none of us underestimated his whole point. He could put an end to this Russian shit real quick. Just rearm the Germans, he said. He said, they're afraid of the Germans.
The Russians?
Dad's view. And, conversely, mm-hmm. he'd sit there and laugh and say, then you go into an Italian village, he'd say, and they'd have the flags flying up to the German and the Italian flag. He said, you'd lob one or two howitzer shells into the village, and the flag would come down, and there'd go an American flag running up. But in fairness, he said, they didn't like it. That war was unpopular. He said they were forced into it, didn't believe in it, didn't want to fight it. So he said, you know, out of fairness to him. But anyway, he had tremendous respect for the enemy and tremendous respect for the Brits. And you could tell him when he talked, he'd get into it emotionally. You know? Mm-hmm. Your dad was one of a kind. Boy, your grandfather, rather. I keep saying your dad.
Oh, it's okay. I know what you mean by now.
You got my code now. You got me.
Yeah.
he was, and when he got the cancer, you know, we talk, and he said he's going over and do the homeopathic stuff. He didn't believe in the medicine and all that. And, of course, a lot of people in the family were very bothered by that, but he kept him alive for a few more years.
Did you say he didn't believe in the medicine?
He was cynical at best.
Hmm.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. I can't think of another word. Cynical about the medical, the traditional approach, the surgery, mm-hmm. medicine, stuff like that. And he went into that homeopathy. He went through an extensive thing, and that was all relatively new territory. That homeopathic treatment, you know, mm-hmm. with the total body and all that stuff. And of course, I think I probably expressed my thoughts to him about what he was doing. That get the real shit, knock off that, you know. But he believed in it. Boy, he did. And like I said, it kept him alive for a few more years.
Was that like a new thing for him just after he got cancer? Or was he always into like homeopathic?
I don't know. I don't remember him ever talking that stuff. But mm-hmm. I think what happened when he got diagnosed, he started doing some research, talking to people. And depending on who he talked to, if he trusted you and he liked you, he'd place a lot of credence in what you'd tell him.
Hmm.
His whole thing was trust and liking, and if he didn't, then I think you'd get dismissed pretty quick.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, did you all, what was your all's relationship like?
We got along. I'd say good. I don't think we ever got close like brothers would, because we didn't have that early connection.
Mm-hmm.
But we got along, and I think we genuinely thought a lot of each other. And I was told by other people that it was reciprocal, that he was glad I was the way I was, because if I'd have been some effing jerky, that would have been more than you could handle. If you knew him, boy, that was him. I know, and the fact that I was able to talk to him on occasions on certain things, particularly on that D-Day celebration, 50th anniversary,
yeah.
And after talking to him and trying to rationalize with him, I took a different approach, and got all over his ass. And
so
you're doing it for the people that didn't make it back, and the people that did make it back screwed up. And they looked to you, you as the leader of that group. And now you're being some kind of a jerk because you don't want to go. I said, I've done a lot of shit in my life that I didn't want to do, but I did it because other people needed it or would benefit from it. And he kind of threw the towel in and went.
That's interesting. So, shoot, what was I going to say?
I didn't know whether you was going to try. I know you're trying to quest some thoughts there, but I didn't know whether you were going to try to go back and do research.
I think I might. I don't really have a super specific reason for being so interested. He died when I was 11. And I always just really liked him, and I really liked, like, listening to him and stuff. And, for some reason, recently have been thinking about him a lot and just kind of, I don't know, just kind of feeling his presence, not in, like, a weird way, but, like, just kind of thinking about him a lot. And, I just kind of started having some questions about his life and realized that I don't really know all that much about him. So I might actually go back and do some research because it's all really interesting to me. And, like, I've always been really interested in learning about, like, who exactly is in our family, because it's such a big family on all sides, and there seems to be a little bit of, there's never really an 100% sure, like, yes, these are the people that were, like, this person's children and everything. And so it's always just been really interesting to me. But I guess with regard to him, I was just kind of...
Denny, hold on one second here. Hold on one second. I'm going to switch phones here. I think I'm... I think that battery is running out.
Okay.
Okay, you on there?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, there you go. Let me... These phones, they're cordless, but when you put them on... on speaker, that battery just runs down about 2 and 3 times faster than it normally does.
Oh.
And I'll be talking and or waiting for an appointment or something with the doctor, and suddenly the thing will just go dead on me. It'll give me a very brief warning. Beep, 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 you know. Mm-hmm. And then, like, 20 seconds later, boy, that's it.
Oh, wow.
And so anyway, what I've learned to do is when I hear that or suspect it's getting close, I just switch phones. I've got a new freshly charged one. But a lot of that stuff is available. It's kind of a pain in the ass to access it, but it is available because the records have been all digitalized now, and it's there. Just how interested or committed is the individual to finding it? That's what it gets. It gets to be a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
To research it and to unearth all the stuff. But your grandfather was he was. I used to tell people, I said, my brother was my hero. It's a humorous story. He don't believe talking. He said. He enlisted. I told you this on December 6, 1941, mm-hmm. and never returned to the States until he was discharged in October of 45.
Wow, he didn't come back at all.
And when he got. I'm rambling there, but his his history, his record as a the war vet is very few. He never once in all that activity, that 4 years of service, and the combat situations that he was in, and the violence. He was in the heat of some of the most vicious battles, and he never once got wounded.
That's amazing.
Never once. And finally, he wound up in a hospital in Germany, and he was in the hospital, and he happened to come across his company commander who had been wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he came up, and he said, "Bob," he said, "they finally got you, huh?" Bob said, "No." He said, "Well, what are you doing here?" Because your grandfather was in the hospital garb like the company commander.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I got the mumps."
Oh, no.
And he got the mumps. Put him in the hospital. And he said, "I felt like a," and this is a term they used back then, "like a shit heel," he said. "Yeah, I'm walking around. And these people were all shot up, screwed up." And he said, they said, "What are you doing? What are you doing here?" And he said, "Well, I got the mumps." And I mean, that's a funny story, but it happened. And he, and of course, he'd make it a lot funnier because he's embellished it, you know, and so on. But but I thought that was pretty good. Never once, not once, five major engagements, and never once.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But he could have been an officer, and he declined it because, as he says, "What the hell do I want that job for? They're all getting killed." And, but they tell them, "Hey, you must become the active platoon leader. Once they get taken off the field, they have nobody else. Then you go down to the most experienced sergeant."
And he still wouldn't take it?
He wouldn't take it. No, he declined it a couple, three times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm. So did you all spend a lot of time together over the years, or was it just like every couple of years kind of thing?
Probably, I would, no, we didn't spend a lot of time because we had our, you know, when you're in the job world, then you pretty much are got all the demand on your time. Okay. Plus, you know, I had a family and he had a family and no, we didn't. I started out in Omaha. Mm-hmm. I wound up moving to the D.C. area in 83. I lived out in the D.C. area for 20 years.
Oh, did you like it here?
And then I retired from the D.C. area down to Florida 20 years ago. That's the 40 years. Now, when I would go back to Omaha to visit the oldest daughter and the kids and so on out there, I would always make it a point to stop and visit the family and so on in Louisville.
Oh.
And so on, or on the other way. But then it got to where I just didn't even bother going back to Omaha. Or if I did, I'd fly because. But before I had three kids, we had a dog, and we had to take everybody back up the station wagon, and so on.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, no. Somewhat, but not real close. Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, I kind of forget about work and stuff.
Lack of desiring to be or anything like that. It was just we were just doing our own things independently, and sometimes they would be pulling us in a different direction, opposite directions.
That makes sense. I kind of forget about. Hold on one second. I kind of forget about jobs and things when thinking about past, like the past. So do you know much about his adopted family?
No.
Did you ever meet like his parents or anything?
You talking about the Tags?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't. And if you think, and I said I was a little jerk. I was a grown-up jerk, actually, because I just didn't have time to listen to that stuff from my mom. And my mom she'd get on your nerves real quick. and I'd get on your grandpa's nerves real quick. And
by doing what? Just like talking a lot?
Just statements, positions she'd take, and the reason they would get on each other's nerves is because they were so goddamn much alike. Yeah. So they would wind up kind of chafing each other, and I don't know if either one of them really understood what back off and take a breath was.
Fair. That seems like the takeaway, or I guess.
And I know that he had exchanges with our mom there a couple times, and he'd call me, and I'd say, "Hey, Bob, that's itsy bitsy shit. What are you getting worked up over that for?" And he got one time where she really pissed him off about something, and she went in and took him off the will. And I told her, "Don't do that, Mom." And she did it anyway. And then I told your grandfather, I said, I'm not going to let her do it if I'm the executor. And she says, I am. I said, whatever there's left, as far as I'm concerned, if there's nothing, that'd be just fine with me. But I said, whatever's left, it's going to go 50-50. And he said, well, you don't have to do that. Do what you want. I said, no. And I could level with your grandpa. I said, don't start your shit with me, man, because I'm a friend. Yeah. And, But I did. I had great, great respect, and he was my hero. And I tell it to people, and to this day. And that and his story about thinking the Germans were just really—he just had tremendous admiration for their ability to fight. What we needed to do is rearm the Germans. And he said, send them over there, and we'll put an end to all this communist shit right away. He was obviously a capitalist through and through. And his solutions weren't always the acceptable diplomatic approach.
Yeah. So when you say he was your hero, was that from, like, his war time, or just from the time you knew him, or both?
I couldn't hear what you said.
Oh, sorry. When you say he's your hero, was that from like his war stories, or?
When they talk about the deaths. Yeah, I meant the veteran standpoint. That his war records, his records as a vet was it's just a little remarkable. I mean, like I said, and then never get wounded.
Yeah,
the stuff, the heat that he was in, and I can just picture him in a battle condition. I was in the Marine Corps 3 years, but I did nothing like your grandpa did nothing. He's when it comes, they tell people, start talking about vets and heroes and so on. I tell them, hey, you know who my hero was? And I tell them bits and pieces about Bob.
That's awesome. I love that.
So he made a little impression on me. And like I said, you really pushed him to find out something, he would just blow it off. By blow it off, I mean, he just would be casual. He'd act like it was no big deal. Like I said, when I asked him, his wife brought up, was showing me the medals. I think one of them was the Silver Star. I didn't at the time know, very honestly. And the only thing I know of that is him relating that story that I told you about the troops and the Germans having them zeroed in. The 88s were a type of artillery, which was extremely effective. It scared the hell out of the GIs, And when he'd talk about those stories, he'd relive them.
Oh, so it was really hard for him to talk about.
He wouldn't, and then nothing never, ever, ever really started spilling until that night at Madeira Beach, when him and I were drinking beer and we had belted down a few, and then he suddenly just got on a roll. And everybody was told to keep quiet. We missed our dinner reservations and everything.
Wow, I hope it was, I mean, I'm sure it was worth it. That sounds like quite the story.
Like I said, nobody had ever heard him talk or spill on that. But I think, again, what I said, I think the medal he got was for that story I related that he told me.
That makes sense.
About that combat situation. That sounds like something that would get a silver star.
Yeah. So what was Marguerite like? You mentioned her a little bit.
She was the nicest, sweetest, most caring. She was a, I'm looking for the accolades. and she would settle your grandfather down when he'd go start some BS stuff, you know. She would just settle him down. And she was a hell of a good person, a very nice person. I don't even know how to describe her. Just one of the nicest people I've ever met. And she was, and my mom, just thought the world of her. And sometimes I think she would go to Marguerite to get to. I'm not saying this right, but to get around Bob, because she knew that Marguerite took her, agreed with her, then Marguerite would tell Bob and work on him. And he was hard headed. I could see where he'd be a tenacious son of a bitch in a fight, because you could just see it when you he'd get pissed at your dad. Now, this time I got dad right. When he was working at your dad's business, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because he didn't think the people were working hard enough, were doing what they were being paid to do. And he wanted to put 120% in everything, and lazy sons of bitches, they just expect to get paid equal. Like I said, I could see where you'd want a couple of 8 or 10 guys like him in a company, because that you'd never lose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, back to Marguerite. She was the one, just beautiful, sweet lady, and you can't say more.
And she worked. Do you know? I don't know if you know this, or can confirm this, but she worked on airplanes during the war, right?
She was on what?
She worked with airplanes during the war. Is that right? I feel like I heard
that. I don't know. Oh. Vaguely, I'm kind of recalling that something. But I really don't know, Sydney. I don't know. It'd be unfair to say that, because I have vague recollection of something like that.
Okay. I think I heard that somewhere along the line, but I.
But a lot of women during the war worked at the manufacturing plants making war weapons.
Right, that makes sense.
Yep, that Rosie the Riveter thing wasn't a make believe; that was for real. And you had a lot of them, and they were a lot of them right around. In Omaha, they were all over the country. And they personalized what they were doing, because if they gave somebody a bad piece of equipment or a bad bullet or something like that, it could cost a life. So, I mean, they become very personal with the spouses, especially the women and the spouses that were working at the defense factories.
That makes sense. That would definitely make it very personal.
Yeah.
especially if your husband was off fighting. So do you know, like, do you know much about, his and Marguerite's relationship at all? Like what their dynamic was? Like she calmed him down, but do you know?
That was my perception, but apparently that worked a lot, but it didn't work in the end. You know, they separated. They never got, I don't think they got divorced, but they separated. And I would ask him, but then, you know, when you get into something like that, you just kind of back off because you, unless you're one of the two parties, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. You don't really want to get involved in it. And that's true with friends who separate, husband and wife, and with close relatives. And you may like both of them or one of them, and you just stay the hell out. And to answer your question, I never really understood what went on, and I stayed the hell out of it, very honestly.
That's fine.
But I noticed he was still a very, very good ex-spouse or whatever the hell he was, and because he looked out and he took care of her. Wasn't like he just walked off and said the hell with it.
Did he ever talk about her?
I can't say I remember that. Yeah.
That's fair. So what was his relationship like with your mother?
It started out good, and like I said, they were very much alike, so they would periodically have a little friction, and then the friction apparently got out of hand when I mentioned that her and him getting into it, and her taking him out of the will, and then telling me that. I said, you don't want to do that, anyway, I did what the will, the first will said, so it didn't make any difference, because if she wasn't around, I exercised my judgment, so.
That's fair. Do you know what they, like, what the tension was about?
Nope.
Interesting. But for the most part, they had a pretty decent relationship.
Yeah, I do. But the relationship was most of the time maintained through your grandma Marguerite and my mom.
There was
a connection, and Bob would be gone. He'd be constantly in and out, so Marguerite and my mom were the ones that were tightest.
That makes sense.
Yeah, your grandpa is like we corralling him is like getting hold of a cat. he was always doing something, always had strong opinions, and always involved in changing or pontificating on what was wrong or right. Like I said, I can see where he'd be a real SOB to fight against the boy because he didn't know when to quit.
Yeah, that definitely would not be who I want to get.
And that attribute is a handy thing to have in a soldier.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a good attribute to have in a family life.
Fair. Did you know anything about, I have heard this, like my dad's told me about it, but that he was an alcoholic and did some kind of, rehab?
Who is this?
Bob.
I think I remember that, but you see, he kept it on the QT, tried to keep it on the QT, and it leaked out. But I vaguely remember that, but as far as I remember something like that, very honest. I'm not being coy, I'm not being cautious. I remember something like that. I And I remember him talking to me a couple times that he had to step back and get a hold of the booze. And we both talked about that because booze can get a hold of you after a while. If you're not careful. That's what killed my daughter.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
My daughter Karen, she died a few years back. And in fact, your dad was here for the funeral.
Yeah, I remember him mentioning that.
But anyway, I have a good appreciation for what it can do. Mm-hmm. But I never had a conversation with your dad about. But it had gotten to me somehow that mm-hmm. he went in, and like I said, we would talk on occasion where he would say, "Well, you got to get a hold of that booze, otherwise it'll get a hold of you." And it was like a 30-second lecture, and then he'd be off on something else.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, you don't know if he did any kind of, like, AA or anything?
No, I don't.
Okay. That's fair. I kind of figured that he didn't really talk about it much, just kind of from what I have heard of him. Doesn't seem like a thing he would really want to chat about.
That'd be consistent with the Bob I knew, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he wanted to talk, then he'd talk, and he'd have strong opinions he would argue with you if you had a different opinion.
Yeah.
Back. But if he didn't, then he didn't want you to know or didn't want to talk about it, then he wouldn't talk about it. And that was true with the war record and everything until that one night in Madeira Beach.
And that was that more, more recently, that was, like, after he got sick, right?
The Madeira Beach thing?
Mm-hmm.
That was after he was diagnosed. That took place after I had moved down here because that was a short drive. We went over there a couple, 3 times. It was a short drive from here to Madeira Beach. I'm on the Florida Panhandle. And Madeira Beach is about 25, 30 miles north of the Tampa area.
Mm.
And I had already retired down here, so.
That's actually where my brother is about to move.
Yeah, and I think he got first diagnosed in the late 90s.
Really?
When do you think it was?
Oh, I don't, I have no idea. I just,
I think the first cancer diagnosis, and then he went into that homeopathic treatment stuff. Like I said, they kept him alive for years.
Many years? Because that would have...
Well, he died after we had moved down here, and I moved down here December. I did move down here. I retired in April of 2002. And I think it was 3 years later.
I think it was around 2005.
That sounds right.
That's impressive. I thought it was all within a couple of years, but I mean, I was really young, so I wouldn't.
Well,
have
it
known.
Could be. It could be. I'm messed up on it too.
Oh no,
it
I'm.
Could be.
I'm sure you're
it
not.
I. That I'm. That I'm listening to his zeal and explaining why that's the way to go instead of getting surgery and all that stuff. And letting the SOBs cut on you and all that, not my words, his. but I was trying to picture it. I think the cancer, it could have been around 2000, but I think it was late 90s when he first got diagnosed, and then he. Like I said, he did the homeopathic treatment, and they kept him alive for a few years. And you say it was 2005 that he passed away?
I'm not sure exactly, but that it would be like 2005, 2006, because I was in fifth grade, so I'd been like 10
or 11. Yeah, that's consistent with my limited recollection, like I said.
Wow, that's impressive. I hadn't realized it was that long. Which makes sense, because I remember my dad telling me that it, like, he did the homeopathic stuff, and that helped for a while. So I guess it would make sense that it was more years than I thought it was.
Well, I don't know that they gave him months to live, and that's what I'm basing it on. But it worked for a while, because he was pretty, he wasn't above the needling you with the facts. You know, hey, I'm still alive, but what do you think now? You know? Okay, yeah, I guess that's pretty good. Who's got, well, I'm not going to argue with that. There you are. Bugging me with that. like I said, he was on your side. You couldn't have a better guy, and he could be a big pain in the ass. And I think him and Grandma Quinlan kind of were very much alike in that regard, and that's probably what caused the clash. And like I said, and I think at that time that Marguerite and your grandpa probably had separated. They never did divorce, did they?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think they did, because I remember asking your grandpa, and but she was a very classy lady, a very, I don't know, some weird stuff, but a very genteel, loving, lovable Southern lady.
Did she have an accent?
Yeah, she did a little.
That's always been an interesting dynamic, because my dad doesn't, and his sisters do.
Well, you see, he comes from Kansas City. He was raised in Kansas City.
Well, I mean,
Oh, your dad. Oh, yeah. Your dad, Bob. That's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't either. And your aunts, they twang when they talk.
Yeah, they super do.
Yeah, and you don't, actually.
Nope. Yeah, my mom is from California, and my dad, for whatever reason, doesn't have an accent, so we never really did, but...
How's Patricia doing?
She's good. She's actually a therapist now.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm. She
was a very, very smart lady. And she was a perfect match for Michael, because they're both pretty sharp people, and I think they probably one of the first things they looked for when they were looking for in the opposite sex was intelligence, and they hit it with both. They're both very very intelligent people. In fact, the whole family is it. Have a weak link in that family
on the smart side.
Your mom and dad and Donna and Nancy and all the rest there.
That's true. They're pretty, like, I'm trying to think, I don't know what the word is. But yeah, that makes sense. They kind of, yeah, my parents are both, they they can both go, they're both very stubborn. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I'm sorry.
Well, I know where Michael gets it.
Yeah.
I don't know where your mom gets it, but I know where Michael gets it.
Yeah, now I do too. What was your mom like? She was very stubborn, you said?
My mom died. Yeah, she was 96, 2 months short of 96 years old.
Wow.
Your grandpa's mom was 2 months short of 96 years old. She died on Mother's Day, May 12th, I think I've got it right, 92. She was born in 1896.
Wow.
And like I said, her dad was born in 1860. A Civil War hadn't even started yet when he was born. Well, I guess it just hadn't started. I mean, that tells you something. But Grandma Quinlan was, my mom was 2 months. She died on May. Her birthday was the 26th of July. Still had a valid driver's license.
Wow. That's impressive.
I would call her from D.C. every day. I would call when I was in town. And say, what are you doing? Or what's here? And she'd say, well, I've got to go pick up the old people and take them down to get their medicine or the groceries. And I'd laugh at your grandfather, Bob. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, shit, she's 20 years older than most of the people starting around. But it was all in her head. She wouldn't let herself get old. And then she finally, and this was a tough decision, but she went out there to live, you know, with you guys in Kentucky there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think that was a good move because she had her friends and so on. But I'd also, when I talked to her, I'd say, what are you doing today? And she'd say, I'd say, what about your friends? What friends? They're all dead.
Oh.
Well, when you get to that age, I guess that's what happens. You look around and think, hell, I'm the only one still above ground, you know.
Yeah.
But like I said, she worked out. She went to the gym up until the last year and a half of her life. She went to the gym. In fact, when Donna would come to visit, or my daughter Karen, you'd have to go bowling with her. You'd have to go to the gym. She'd take water aerobics.
Wow.
And it paid off. And she had a 4-year license that was issued when she was 92. And she was still, and you had to pass a test. And she had no problem doing it. But she didn't really start getting problems until the last year of her life. I'll tell you a funny story about your grandfather and me.
Mm-hmm.
Grandma Quinlan, or Mom, I should have been talking to him. She was in great health and lived by herself, and then she decided she had a house that was about 5 blocks from Cathedral. She would go to Mass every morning at Cathedral, walk 5 blocks, and as I used to laugh when I was in service and everything else, and I was a little dumb little jerk, she'd pray for me, and apparently it made a difference. But she was very active, very mobile, very self-sufficient. And then we finally sold, I said, you ready to go into an apartment, maybe get away from that house? She said, yeah. So we sold the house, and she already had the people picked out she was going to sell it to, because they had told her, if you're ever going to sell it, Ethel Mary, we want to buy it. And then she called them, and they said, we'll be right down. And it was, boom, like a matter of 2 days.
Wow.
They had to arrange a loan and a couple of sisters, I think they were, or something, and they closed. The whole thing was done in like less than 40 days, I think.
That's amazing.
They were in my mom's house, and I had her in an apartment on 40th Street, which was now 2 blocks from the Cathedral. And so she only had to walk 2 blocks, and then we started noticing that she was forgetting and things, and all this started happening in the last year and a half of her life.
That's impressive.
Just come on quick, boom. And we were speculating, the docs were, that maybe she had a series of little mini strokes. And anyway, the coming time when we had to put her in some home somewhere, and she had called and talked to your grandpa. And he called me. He said, what am I going to do? He said, well, this is something you should handle. I said, well, you chicken shit son of a bitch. You want me to do it. She called you, and she want me to do it. And, you know, I'm out of town. I've been sick of it. I just come back from I think Japan. I've been gone for 45 days. And I said, okay. Anyway, I was a nervous wreck. How am I going to handle this? And I flew out to Omaha, and I had already been talking to Saint, I can't think of the one on 90th, there was a Catholic home on 90th Street, and I thought, well, that's the ideal one for her assisted retirement home.
Mm-hmm.
And I was I talked to them, I had it all cleared, everything was open, and everything taken care of, and I showed up to the house there. And I always make her mad if I wouldn't call. And so I didn't call, so she was double mad. She, And she looked up and saw me coming in, knocking on the door. Who is it? I'm like, who? I said, it's me, Mom. Open the door. Michael? Yeah. And she opened the door. Why didn't you call? She said, lash into me about not calling. And I got in. And she said, what are you doing here? I said, well, you know, before I tell her, well, I'm here on business. And any time I was anywhere around there, I would always drop through Omaha. And if I hadn't business or anything in the Omaha area, I'd always tell the people I was dealing with in the company or the union, I'd say, hey, come with me. I'm going to go out and visit my mom. And she just loves seeing those people. But anyway, I got out there that time. I was by myself. And she was looking around for where's your nice friends at? And then she knew something. She knew what was going on. And I said, we got talking. I've been thinking, Mom, maybe you need to go into assisted living. I was very tentative with just scared to death how she was going to take it in the info. And she said, I know what you're here for. She said, I've already taken care of it. I said, what do you mean you take care of it? She said, I've already taken care of it. Oh, and I said, you did? And she said, I said, yeah. And I said, well, you know, I was looking at St. Vincent's out there, and I said, no. She said, I'm going to the Paxton Manor. I said, well, have you talked to him? She said, yeah, it's all arranged.
Wow.
She had given the notice and was done everything on her own. And I literally had to just go in there and pack some boxes and move her out of her apartment, collect the deposit, a few other things, and move some stuff, give away a bunch of stuff, and that was it.
Wow.
So I got back to Maryland, and your grandfather called. Oh, he said, geez, he said, did you do it? And I said, yeah. He said, how'd it go? I said, oh, man, I said, you owe me big time, Bob. You big time. I went through a big song and dance. Oh, yeah, yeah. He said, yeah. He just said, I didn't know whether I could do it or not. He said, he went through everything. And then he found out afterwards that he said, you son of a bitch, you made me go through all that. I was laughing. I said, well, you know, you pass it off on me. But anyway, it was kind of a funny story. We laughed about it afterwards. I said, you melted pretty good. And I said, and then, you know, so I melted back. What the hell? But it was a funny story. But she retired at the Paxton Manor. Was there a year but not even a year and a half. Just one morning I get the call. Said she's pretty bad shape. I said, well, okay, I'll be out. It'll take me a while to get out there. If I won't get there until this evening. And they said, this is probably the end. And so I got out there. She had already just died before I got there. And I remember asking the doctor, well, what'd she die of? And I thought at the time, God damn, man. He pissed me off. He said, well, old age, what did you think she was going to die of? He said, you don't live forever. That was his answer. Doctor. So much for bedside manner.
Right.
And it kind of ticked me off. I thought about it afterwards and thought, well, actually, he's right. That's what it was, old age. And like I said, she still had a valid driver's license.
That's amazing.
What was
your relationship like with her?
I think it was very good, but I would periodically, like your grandfather, piss her off by not doing something she thought I should do, or by not paying attention, and in some respects, she was absolutely right now. Because as I talk to people like you and try to recall, you know, what the history, what this and that, yeah, I wish I'd have paid more attention to her because she was always trying to corral me to get me to sit down and listen to her tell me stuff. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have time. It was just boring, and I didn't want to do it.
Right.
And that would frustrate the hell out of her. And that's probably putting it charitably. I after I grew up, knocked off some of the childish, stupid shit that I was doing as a kid.
Yeah.
Things worse for everybody. I think we had an excellent relationship. And like I said, I cried when she left.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad you all had such a good relationship. Oh, wait. Hold on one second.
I thought he was coming to the door. Okay. Just said usually.
I know. Just give him, make him strike. Nope, Bill, quiet. Someone just came to the door and my dog started barking.
I'm curious, do you live, you don't live at home still, do you?
No, I live in D.C.
In where?
Washington, D.C.
Oh, you do? Where do you live out there?
I live in the Shaw area.
Yeah.
Where did you live when you were here?
We lived in the Maryland. In the Crofton Bowie area and the Annapolis area. I was right outside of Annapolis.
Oh, okay.
And I'd commute in Highway 50 when I'd come in.
Oh, cool.
And our offices were right at on the on our office was right at on 15th Street between L and M.
Oh, okay.
Right across the street, Washington Post.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, boy. And right behind the Russian embassy. Now they got a big fancy one now. But the old Russian embassy used to be behind the Washington Post.
I guess that's...
And I come out... When I come driving in the morning when I was in town, I was traveling a lot, but when I was in town, I'd look up and see the flags at the Madison Hotel, and I'd see it was the American Security Bank right across the street from there. And I'd look and see what the flags were to see who was in town. And then, of course, anytime any dignitary, local politicians, international, you name national politicians, they were always coming to see Katharine Graham at the Washington Post.
Yeah.
We could always look over and see right across the street, and I'd see all who was going to be on the news that night.
That's cool.
yeah, that was, we were right in the middle of stuff, boy. And like I said, in 83, we were still hostile with the Russians, and we could go down and pick it.
we live on W Street between 1st and North Capitol.
So where do you work at?
Oh, well, right now I'm in school. I'm getting a master's at Georgetown.
Oh, all right. what are you into?
I'm getting a master's in Arab studies.
You speak Arab?
Not fluently, but I'm in the process. I'm about to take I'm about to take an intensive Arabic class this summer for 9 weeks. And by the end of my program next year, I'll at least be proficient enough to pass the proficiency exam.
There you go. That's good. I'm telling you, the big thing when I was a young guy when I first was Russian. If you could take modern Russian, that was a, I don't know why they stipulated modern Russian, but that was the subject, term title. And that was big demand.
Yeah.
Arabic would be, I can see where that'd be a big demand too.
Yeah, it's actually a little bit less these days than when I kind of first started thinking about it in high school and college, which I guess is good for the world, but not great for me. but yeah, it's still pretty big demand. And I'm wanting to work in either diplomacy or intelligence, something to that effect.
You know, your Uncle Dan, I always accuse him of being a spook. He does a lot of defense contracting. You know that.
Oh, he does?
He's a physicist.
Oh. Very similar to that.
If you come out and you decide you may want to deviate from the diplomatic approach or something like that, he does a lot of defense contracting. And he does it himself. He was in his old business a couple, three times, and he left and then come back. He drives me up the wall. he's a physicist, and he would take off for like a month or two, be gone, he'd be down in Latin America, and I finally had to ask him, hey, Dan, are you a spook? He suddenly disappear for a couple of months, and he'd laugh, and then he'd give me the reply he just gave me is the standard answer that spooks give.
Yeah.
So he didn't reassure me. He gave me a standard textbook.
Textbook, yes, I am a spook.
I'm in denial of being a spook. I said, and he laughed, but he just keep him in mind because he I know he talks to your dad on occasion.
Oh, he does?
I believe so.
What contractor does he work for?
I don't know the name of the guy now. He was the name of the outfit. He quit about a year ago. He had no idea. Let me check that. He drives me up a wall. I started to say this earlier and thought maybe I shouldn't, but and you can appreciate this because you're like my grandkids, I think. In this regard. Well, this is a compliment, actually. They get jobs. And they feel depressed. They feel constrained.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "What the hell are you talking about?" And they don't allow you to express yourself. And your dad, Michael, was like this.
Yeah.
I said, "What the hell are you talking about, man?" I looked at the pay, and I'm, and I guess this is what I was like your grandpa now. I say, "Hey, goddammit, I know exactly what he was making. He was making $187,000 a year. He walked away from it. That's right." Military and Air Force, Army, and he also works for the Canadian government, the Canadian Army. They love him. In fact, they bid their contracts twice. And in responding to his company, bid and said, "If we go with your company, they wanted Dan as the contact guy."
What's his company's name?
I can't think of it because he changes. I started to make the point here. He changes whenever he decides, and so now he's back to working for somebody.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know who the hell it is, but I'll tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
And just get something to write this down.
Okay.
407-615-1672. Dan Quinlan. And if you become disenchanted or disillusioned or want to look at something else give him a call either way and just tell him you're out there. Now he lives in Orlando. And he's right outside that Central Florida Technical Center area.
Mm-hmm.
But he works at his office. His main companies work out of D.C. And like I said, he has a lot of connections with the military.
Okay, great.
And his sister Karen,
mm-hmm,
worked with the NASA, and she was a defense contractor. Worked for computer science, and then she went to work for a small company called Abacus Technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And she did very well there. In fact, she brought the biggest contract in NASA for small business, 900, and $40 million. Well, you're going to say that's not small business. But the reason she got it for small business, she was a small business. She went in and teamed up with some big guys, computer science, I think the other Raytheon, whatever it was, I can't, and made them as subs to her company's small business.
Wow.
$940 million contract, biggest one ever awarded to a small business. And technically, it goes way beyond small business status, but the way they structured it allowed them to do that, to bid as a small business, and they got it.
Since the small business was the lead?
I went as a consultant on her for about 5 years.
Oh.
Labor relations. Yeah.
Cool.
And but anyway, yeah, she had contacts, but Dan could maybe be of help down the line or whenever.
Okay.
But just call him, tell him you're in town sometime when he's there. Say, give me a call and see if you guys can't get together for lunch or something.
Yeah, that'd be great.
He'd love that. And as soon as you tell him you're Michael's daughter, he talks to your dad. I know that.
Yeah, I actually technically work for a defense contractor. Like, I am on a leave of absence for my master's, but I work for Booz Allen.
For Booz Allen, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Karen worked for them for a while.
Oh, really? Does she like it?
Yeah. Well, she went off to the small company.
Fair.
and did her thing, and she, her thing was that she was so good at what she did. She was a smart kid, like you guys are, very, very intelligent. She was a lot like your grandpa, very sure, very, in fact, when they would bring in to do a review on small business offers, that they would bring her in to sit down and deal with them 2 and 3 star generals.
Wow.
Because she would just sit there and take rapid-fire questions. She had all the answers. They'd think they were going to throw something up, and she would handle it. And she was quick on her feet. She had a mind like a steel trap. And I'm reminiscing. But her brother's that way. And he could be a good resource if you decide to expand out or maybe do career changing or a little deviation from what the game plan is. And he just would be a good guy to talk to anyway and get input from, because he's pretty successful.
I wrote his phone number down. I'll definitely call him or email him.
He's Dan Quinlan. And, you asked, you think I'd know the name of the company, but he changes. Like I said, he's been at his own business 2 or 3 times, and I know it because he's run it through I had a business, a small business I set up as a consultant. And so I run his payroll through my company, and I knew exactly what he was making. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'm getting some instructions here that I am getting close. A long time ago, I don't know how, but I got the job of feeding the family, and I've had this for 40 years. This is what happens when you run your mouth off about what the other person does and everything he's doing. Anyway, I took on a job of feeding the family, but nobody had ever had any pigeons, because when I feed them, it's pizza or firehouse subs.
Oh. Well, yeah.
And there's no complaints.
I bet.
So, anyway, I was just reminded, I don't know, but how long? We've been talking quite a while here, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She just brought in a menu from the firehouse, so I probably, you give Dan a call.
Okay.
And just like I said, and tell him when he's in town, you guys get together, go to lunch, and establish a rapport, because it's worth your while.
Okay.
He's got a lot of contacts, and he's well-known, well-respected. He worked on a Navy outfit, just quickly, let me say this.
Okay.
Probably got to get going. he worked on the Navy. We installed a whole new system on the Pacific Fleet. And when they got done, a whole new weapon system, they wanted him to go out on a 3-month prove-in on the aircraft carrier.
Mm-hmm.
I said, he told me that. I said, that's neat as hell. I said, yeah, you're going to go out on a carrier? And he said, yeah. Anyway, he went home and told his wife, and she started complaining about it. I guess you got to make concessions like that. You do.
Yeah.
But anyway, what am I going to do, you know, and that type of thing. And so he didn't go, but I said, I think I'd have told her, I'll see you in 3 months. but yeah, he has a great reputation among the military.
Awesome. I'll definitely.
I guess Maggie's a physicist, and and he went to school. Him and his sister both went to school in Maryland, College Park, and they did good.
Yeah, apparently.
Listen, kid, I'm going to have to let you go. But you make it a point to call, Dan. And if you want to talk again, other questions, pick up the phone, give me a holler, and I'll get back to you. And maybe we can talk more frequently, how long have we been talking, an hour and a half?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a little less long.
Yeah.
But I didn't know you lived in D.C. area either.
Yeah, I just moved here last July.
Okay. Where's your brother live?
He's actually about to move to Florida in June. Bill.
You got a dog.
Quiet. Yeah, I'm sorry.